fellow podcast listener, and welcome to the Pop Culture Pub Podcast. I am your host. My name is Chris Lockhart. Joining us is my co-host in crime, Mr. Jason Roberts. How's it going, Jason?
I'm going pretty good.
Excellent. So our 9/11 episode that we did is going to air before we recorded this episode. So on our 9/11 episode, that was actually your return episode after a few months off. So I didn't say it in that recording, but I'm going to say it now. I'm glad to have you back, man. It's glad that you are here with us this evening.
Oh, yes. It's been, yeah, well, we were trying to figure it out. I think it was June, or was it the...
I honestly can't remember. It's been a few months.
Yeah.
But, no, it's awesome to have you back. Thank you for joining us. And joining us this evening, last but not least, is Mr. Kevin Decent. How's it going, Kevin?
I'm doing all right here. I kept my mic too warm for Jason.
Nice.
You know, it's good to have you back, and luckily here at Pop Culture Pub, there's plenty of microphones and places to sit here.
Yep. All right, well, let's see here. Oh, I was going to, aside from making an announcement that Jason was back, I have another announcement to make. I'm going to be going through some classic podcast episodes that I recorded prior to the Pop Culture Pub. So if you've never listened, if you don't know what I'm talking about, I used to be on a number of different podcasts. Some that I created, one was called the Random Nerdness Podcast, which was a podcast that spun off from my blog. I was a co-creator on the Geek Fallout podcast, which I took over producing, I think, on episode 50 or 51. And then I created Trek 1701, which was a Star Trek podcast. And then I for one season, I did a Game of Thrones podcast called Hear Us Podcast. I did a couple episodes of a podcast called Cobble Canucks, which was a Coronation Street podcast, because I'm a Canadian, so you know we have to watch Coronation Street up in Canada. You don't have to, but a lot of us do. And then that kind of all got amalgamated into the Geek Fallout show, which I did in the last couple years. I took about a year off before I started this podcast. So anyway, I have a bunch of old episodes that I produced from them. I'm going to be re-releasing them on this feed, so they'll be on the Pop Culture Pub feed. And I'm actually going to be re-editing some of them because, you know, it was a few months ago, I was listening to some old podcast episodes. And, yeah, I think I've come a long way in terms of my editing abilities. So I'm going to go through some old episodes, cut out some of the fat, trim the fat, I guess. So you'll be hearing Jason, and you'll be hearing Kevin, I'm sure, on several episodes, and you'll probably be hearing some people that I haven't podcasted with in a while. So I'm kind of interested to see, or to hear them again. I'm going to be trimming the fat, so I'm going to be trying to get rid of some of the dated material. Because, like, on the Geek Fallout in particular, we used to do, like, news and stuff before our topics. So, yeah, I'll be doing that. So that is coming in the not-too-distant future. But for this episode, we are doing a topic called Bring Back That TV Show. And we're all going to rifle off some TV shows that we want to see brought back for whatever reasons. Either they were canceled too early, or, you know, maybe they didn't end the way we wanted and we want to see something done again with that TV series. So, Jason, since you are back in the saddle, I'll start with you. What is a TV show that you want to see brought back?
Briscoe County Jr. Nice. I love and adore Bruce Campbell. Like, him and I have, like, a long history of, like, meeting back and forth and between Comic Cons and just stumbling upon, you know, like, real life situations. And so it's just kind of like, I love everything the man does, really. And it's just Briscoe County Jr. It was kind of like that. It's a Wild West, but it had a little bit of a steampunk influence, but it was just Bruce Campbell, that slapstick comedy, goofy, sarcastic, you know. And I love the show from beginning to end, and I really think it really started hitting its stride like towards the middle of the season and then going towards the end, and I don't think it got a fair shot. Like, I think they really could have done more, but that's one show I would love to like come back at least, because it was a lighthearted show. It had some serious points, but it was just definitely that classic Western. I always loved cowboys and stuff, but when I added that industrial, like, you know, steampunk quality to it, it just kind of really just resonated with my style and theme and what I actually enjoy out of like storylines or just things in general. And so, but that's when I would like to see come back.
Excellent. I don't think I ever actually watched an episode of that, but I love Bruce Campbell. I think that was one of those that's always been on like on my back burner. It's like I'm going to get around to this. But yeah, Bruce Campbell's awesome.
Yeah.
Kevin, what's a TV series you would like to see brought back?
So I don't know if either of you will ever hear of it. I mean, like, at least we both knew of Briscoe County. No, I mean, that shows the epitome of cult. And it seems like every couple of years there's something like, we're going to do a movie, we're going to do a miniseries, we're going to do this, we're going to do that, and nothing ever happens.
Yeah.
So I'm going to go back to 2007. Now, in 2006, a little show called How I Met Your Mother started.
Mm-hmm.
And it started to build. It was a relative hit. They're going to build a night around it, as, you know, networks do. It wasn't the phenomenon it became, but it was building up. So the next year, How I Met Your Mother is going to be on at 8. They needed a good show at 8:30, just the way television goes. So they put on a show called The Class. And I love this show. It has never been released on DVD. It was such a funny concept. There were only 19 episodes. The people that know it love it. There's not a chance in hell, because of the cast, that it will ever come back. Ratings started going down a little bit toward, you know, a big spike for a big new show, and then it trailed off towards the end. Didn't make enough to come back. And then they decided, well, you know what, maybe we'll come back, but we're going to try a different show at 8:30 next season and see how that does. And that show is Big Bang Theory.
Mm.
Oh, they never came back. But the cast... just part of the cast. Jason Ritter. Old Jack Tripper's son there.
Mm-hmm.
Who's done many things. Lizzie Kaplan, who I first noticed in Mean Girls and Cloverfield, but she's been in tons of things since. I'm going to forget his name. The redheaded, just Tyler Ferguson, redheaded one on Modern Family. He's on it. John Barenthal, most famous now as The Punisher, is on it.
Wow.
As a goofy, dumb jock, playing a comedic role. So the concept of the series is, through a ton of, like, silly but not ridiculous. Like, it's a lot for a first episode. It's almost past that boundary of sitcom. This would never, ever happen. It's right up to the edge, but you're like, you know what, maybe this could happen in a big city, maybe this could all happen. This group of about 10 friends that all knew each other in grade school suddenly meet back up and have their lives collide now. So they've had marriages, divorces, kids, breakups, moves, you know, life experiences and all, but all of a sudden they're kind of all, hey, these were my best friends in third grade. Well, that's sweet and adorable, but that doesn't mean you can still be the same people in your, you know, 20s, 30s, whatever. But all of a sudden, they're crammed together again. And every sitcom thing happens, but it's this epic tale that they're all weaved into, and their lives are all connected, and so funny. Relationships, dating, you know, ridiculous sitcom stuff happening. fantastic. Everyone on it is great, and everyone went on to bigger, better things. And that's why it'll never come back. What kills me is it's never been on DVD, and it's a CBS show, so CBS doesn't do Netflix, Hulu, any of that, really. So it's just like, it's 12 years now, and it just keeps falling into obscurity.
Excellent. Yeah, I don't think I remember that, but yeah.
If you find it under some, you know, nefarious means, it's well worth watching.
Excellent. All right. Well, for mine, it's also one that's very obscure now because it's been so long. And it's a show called Stark Raving Mad. And the reason why I think in today's climate why this would flourish is because Tony Stark, you know, everyone loves Tony Stark. Everyone loves the Starks of Winterfell. Having a show with Stark in the title, I think, would work in 2019. So this was a show called, as I said, Stark Raving Mad. It was an American sitcom that aired on NBC, the network famous for canceling Star Trek. And it aired from September 23rd, 1999 to July 13th, 2000. And the series starred Tony Shalhoub, who went on to play Monk on the TV series Monk, and he was also on Wings as the 90s sitcom Wings as Antonio Scarpacci, I want to say his name is. He was the cab driver on Wings. And Neil Patrick Harris, who, of course, we know who Neil Patrick Harris is now. Well, we did back then. I mean, he was Doogie Howser previously, but...
But he was certainly forgotten in this time frame.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say he was forgotten then, because, like, as soon as I was like, oh, Doogie Howser. Like, that's how I remembered him. But if you had never watched Doogie Howser, MD, you wouldn't know who he was, I guess, in 1999. But yes, I got a little description from Wikipedia here. Shalhoub stars as odd horror novelist Ian Stark, who is obsessed with practical jokes and whose first book, Below Ground, was a bestseller. Neil Patrick Harris is Stark's reluctant editor, Henry McNeely, who has a variety of phobias and possibly obsessive-compulsive disorder. On January, and this is, and I mean at the time, like when this was coming out, I thought it was hilarious, I thought it was funny. It was doing good in the ratings. And January 10th, 2000, the sitcom won a People's Choice Award for Favorite New Television Comedy Series. But unfortunately, it was officially canceled by NBC on April 15th, 2000, despite having a 10.7 million average household share, and it was also ranked 15th among all programs. So, I mean,
there's the story behind that. I don't know, but I'm saying like there, like something happened.
Yeah, something had to have happened because you got almost 11 million viewers for your episodes, and it's ranked 15th overall. Like, it just it's a head scratcher. But I found it really funny. You know, I thought Tony Shalhoub, he had like a beard. Like, he almost looked like Baron Mordo, like from the comic books. You know, he had like the goatee, the long goatee mustache thing going on. You didn't know if he was nuts. it was a really funny program, and I was very sad when it didn't come back. Again, like I said, you know, Tony Shalhoub went on to make Monk, which I've never actually watched, but I hear it was very good. And then Neil Patrick Harris, you know, went on to, you know, drawn a blank. He was How I Met Your Mother. Yeah, he was Barney on that one. But, I would love to see them, especially Neil Patrick Harris being who he is now, you know, and Shalhoub, you know, I'd love to see them come back and do this series again.
And I mean, this sounds awful and amazing. Like, everything you're describing, I'm just thinking this is the most ridiculous idea I've heard. But considering these two actors, they must have just... I never know when someone says the actor was eating the scenery what it means, but I cannot think of a better term to use right now. They must have just been having a blast and like, let's just go over the top and make the most of it and have fun. And it probably showed through on camera too. Like
absolutely.
I'm going to see if this is on anything.
The one thing I will say, like Shalhoub and Neil Patrick Harris were amazing, but the supporting cast was a little meh, you know, like it wasn't like any of them really stood out. But yeah, no, those two definitely. I would love, even if, you know, it was a continuation of the original, you know, storyline, like 20 years later, they come back together and he's, you know, maybe Stark is, you know, written a new book or something and whatnot. But anyway, Jason, do you have another show on your list, sir?
Yeah, it's kind of technically not a TV show. It was right when YouTube just came out, and the idea of actually having like YouTube shows were just kind of starting to. It was like right in that frontier time.
Mm-hmm.
And Felicia Day and Josh Whedon. There's two shows of Felicia Day I wish she would do again, but she finished it. One was The Guild.
Yep.
But the one I'm talking about is it had Josh Whedon was working with her on it. It had it was Nathan Fillion, and it also had Neil Patrick Harris in it, and it was called Dr. Horrible.
Oh, yeah.
Or the sing-along blog. Yeah, when they released it, it was a three-part, or was it a four-part?
I think three.
It was three? Yeah, and it was...
We watched, like, the first two in a day, and then had to wait the next day or whatever for part three, and then watched it all together again anyways as a mini-movie.
Yeah, and it was, like, I loved the characters and just the story overall, and the whole thing was completely original. It was new, and it was just like, I loved it. And they always were talking about doing another one. And I know they made comic books and things that kind of followed afterwards or before, but it was just kind of like, they were always, it seems like every Comic-Con or something that they're at, they always kind of mention it and like, oh, we're working on it. But that's been how long? It's kind of like the Firefly type, you know, like, oh, we're going to try, but no, you know, so it's just kind of like, I wish they would do more with it, at least, you know, just kind of have, like, approach Netflix or something, you know, and be kind of like, hey, at least give us a season and just be able to have multiple, like, but I don't know. That's the one I would wish they would actually do more with is the Dr. Horrible sing-along blog.
Excellent. Kevin, the next one on your list, sir.
All right, side note with what Jason brought up, have either of you ever seen The Legend of Neil?
Yes.
Okay, because once you mentioned Guild, I thought maybe that's where you're going to. I'm like, Felicia Day was on it, which she was, but it was a cameo in one episode, really. All right, as long as we're both familiar with it, because if not, I would strongly suggest watching it.
Oh, yeah. No, I love Legend of Neil. That was a good one.
So I'm going to go with a big show. We all know it and everything. But I think it got canceled too soon, and I think the potential, they never reached the potential or explored as much as they could have. And that's Justice League Unlimited.
Mm-hmm.
That original Justice League team is fantastic. Carrying on with, you know, from Batman to Superman to Justice League, you got a small team. You make Jon Stewart Green Lantern a star in mainstream culture. Same with Hawkgirl. Elevating those two characters to the point where everyone knew who they were. Brilliant. Fantastic. You tell epic stories with all of them. Wonderful show. And then you go, you know, we got a lot more characters. And for a little bit, you get Justice League Unlimited with everyone. Everyone showed up. The best part of that cartoon was going, him? Her? Are you kidding me? Or having to dig out like your old DC Who's Who's or the trading cards. Mm-hmm. They're going, okay, who the hell is this character? Because I've never seen them before. I've been reading comics forever. And as much as they did show, I really don't think that they got the chance to explore all of it. Even if you just did... now, granted, it's the big three, so it's not really this expansive, unlimited cast. But they did the Superman story, what is it, What Do You Get for the Man Who Has Everything?
Mm-hmm.
With the Black Mercy and Mongol and all. And it's just a half-hour cartoon telling the story, but oh my god, it's so good. And of course, DC has their animated movies now, which are great. But imagine if Justice League Unlimited just took, like, short little classic stories and went nuts with them. Like, why not? Like, what if your season premiere is redoing from a DC animated story point, Armageddon or Invasion? Like, just for the heck of it. You know, what if they were able to bring in the Legion more? Or, you know, Commandy? You know, I mean, just anyone. There's so much you could have pulled from in DC. And I feel... there's so many good ones. There's a lot of good episodes on there. But another season or two, it could have been like the greatest cartoon ever.
Excellent. No, I definitely agree with you. I would love to see, yeah, something like that done. All right, for my next TV series, this is actually two TV series that I'm combining into one. And I have even come up with a somewhat working title, and that is Star Trek Gamma. Now this series is going to be a joint continuation of both Deep Space Nine and Voyager, taking place the exact amount of years that since the Voyager series finale, which was, May 2001. So, you know, like, let's say this airs in 2021, it'll be 20 years later. And I'm thinking this would be a four-season limited series with 10 episodes per season and would feature some classic characters from those series and maybe even TNG returning while also introducing some new characters. The reason why I'm calling this Gamma is because I want the Gamma Quadrant to play an important role in what's going on with the events happening during the series. Like, I'm thinking something's happening in the Gamma Quadrant that will essentially affect the whole galaxy. Like, there's, you know, I don't know, like a super black nova or a super black hole or something that's, you know, growing and threatening to destroy, you know, the whole galaxy if left unchecked, and it's in the Gamma Quadrant. So you have, you know, of course, Deep Space Nine still there. You would have a new Voyager, that has been commissioned, and its first mission is to go into the Gamma Quadrant, and make contact with the Dominion. Because at this point, I'm thinking the Dominion hasn't had much contact with the Alpha Quadrant, that, you know, they've kind of kept to themselves, you know, because there's this... something. I'm just using a black hole as you know, my MacGuffin right now. It's what everyone needs to focus on. So they, you know, the new Voyager goes through the wormhole to make contact with Odo and the founders to you know, address this threat. And I'm thinking, you know, the new Voyager would, you know, have some DS9 TNG people also on it. You could have, like, Wesley Crusher, because I know Will Wheaton would do this series. You know, maybe have him as a commander at this point. You could have Commander Nog, you know, Starfleet's first Ferengi. You could maybe even have Worf there, you know, as maybe Captain Worf, or maybe he's there, you know, maybe he's still an ambassador with, you know, the Federation ambassador to Kronos. Maybe he's there, you know, representing the Klingon Empire for negotiations. You could have, you know, Ensign Kim, you could have Tom Paris, you know, there's a, you know, I think you would get enough people back that you could crew that ship and also have, you know, some familiar faces back at Deep Space Nine. Now, the only thing I'm thinking is, you know, would they have to make a new Deep Space Nine? Because the original Deep Space Nine, you know, in show-wise, was already, I think it was like 40 years old by the time they took over. So, I mean, you know, maybe the station's still kicking around. Maybe, you know, it was decommissioned at some point. I'm thinking, you know, just budget-wise, it would be cheaper for them to make a new space station rather than recreate all the original sets. You know, they could just do new sets, maybe simpler sets. You know, I'm just thinking, you know, from a production standpoint, it might be cheaper to make a new Deep Space Nine. You know, and you could also use this series as a way of addressing certain plot threads that were never really resolved. You know, like I would love to see Worf's brother Kern, you know, maybe one day realize who he is. You know, maybe we can finally find out what happened to Thomas Riker. Like, we knew he was taken to a Cardassian prison, but what happened to him? You know, maybe he's still out there. Maybe he's still, you know, in an abandoned Cardassian prison. You know, what happened to Garak? You know, maybe he's the leader of Cardassia at this point. And I'm also thinking, because I just watched the Deep Space Nine documentary, and I Rene Auberjonois, who played Odo, you know, really didn't like doing his makeup, and I can't see him wanting to go back to that. But I think at this point, with him spending so much time with the Founders, I'm assuming that he'll have been there this whole time. Maybe he can just not have to do the Odo makeup. Maybe he can just be Rene Auberjonois. Like, he just comes out of the, you know, the big ocean of Founders, and he's such a good shapeshifter now that he can look human. You know, maybe that'd be one way to entice him to come back. But anyway, I would love to see, you know, this series as a, you know, as I said, as a continuation of both Voyager and Deep Space Nine. You know, I think you could get enough, you know, of the actors to come back to make it worthwhile. You have to make it something, you have to have something big happening. Like, there's a big reason why they're coming back. So anyway, that is my suggestion, if Paramount's listening, for another Star Trek series. All right, Jason, do you have another show, sir?
Yeah, it's kind of a, I think it'll be two shows, but mostly because they have so many stories that intertwine with each other. There's a lot of crossover episodes.
Okay.
And they're both on a sci-fi channel. One was called Eureka, and the other one is Warehouse 13.
Yep.
And I love the characters in both, and especially in the later seasons for Eureka, and especially, again, Felicia Day and Will Wheaton, once they joined that cast, like, it was just, like, it really kind of elevated it.
Yep.
And then with Warehouse 13, I love the premise for it so much, and they actually, it's funny, is because they have their Farnsworth like device and everything that it can communicate back and forth with, and it's how you can actually name your phone and everything, and so when I connect to Wi-Fi, it actually would say Farnsworth on it, but that's small nerdy humor there. But anyways, yeah. I really, especially Warehouse 13, because I only think they had 5 seasons. And Eureka, I think, stopped after 6? Was it 7?
But I'm not sure.
It was, I really think, like, they didn't, that they had so much story plot, and I know, especially Warehouse 13 just kind of abruptly ended.
So, like, it kind of. Were they canceled then? Like, was it, did sci-fi pull the plug? Oh, okay. I hate sci-fi for that. They are so bad for that.
Oh, right. And it was those two shows. Like, I'm grateful you have so much that you do have, but at the same time, it's like you could have easily made these your flag like shows. And they had so many crossover episodes back and forth that, like, I can't tell you how many. And it was not even so much like story plots intertwining with each other. They even had like
random little cameos, like, you know, Will Wheaton happened to be on, you know, would have a 10-minute scene on Warehouse 13, or one of the other actors would wind up appearing up on Eureka, you know, but it was just a lot of back and forth, and I really, it was very frustrating because Warehouse 13 stopped. I have yet to find that on DVD, or, you know, I know it was on Netflix for a while, but you had seasons 1, 2, and 5.
Hmm.
Yeah, I'm like, weird. No. Yeah.
Yeah.
Eureka, I think I found Eureka on Amazon where you can buy it, but at the same time, it's like they want an arm and a leg for it.
Mm-hmm.
But I really, I miss those kind of shows, and I miss those shows in general, and I really think they kind of screwed the pooch on that one. So.
All right. No, that sounds good. Yeah, sci-fi, damn those guys.
Right?
But anyway, Kevin, do you have another show on your list, sir?
Yeah, and just to follow up there, for Warehouse 13, I am all for any reason for Allison Scagliati to be on TV again.
Right?
I'm still waiting for her to be Cassie Hack in the upcoming Hack Slash movie, which has been upcoming for like 10 years now.
Oh, jeez.
I kind of think it's not happening. And I would have picked a sci-fi show too, but only the first episode is allowed on the sci-fi app, and I can't find the DVD anywhere. Love the first episode of Blood Drive. I know it only lasted one season. I can't wait to finish it one day, but now I got to find this out-of-print DVD because sci-fi won't let me watch the rest of it. But to go to a different cable channel, now I wrote a lengthy blog post a few months ago about how much I cannot stand Comic Book Men. I ended up hating it. I watched the first two episodes when it debuted. Didn't like it. Many years later, someone I worked with said, give it another try. There was studio getting involved. There was producers getting involved. They did like a 5-6 episode first season just to get it going there.
Yep.
They had huge meetings in between, and the second season it got so much better, and everyone was more genuine and all. I said, okay, I'll try. So it was like my going to bed show. You know, let me just watch like a quick little half hour thing before I go to bed. And I got madder and madder and madder at them. The way they treated each other, the things they said about comics, the way they treated geeks, the way they treated the celebrities in their store. I got madder and madder. But then, because of the success of it, AMC offers Kevin Smith another reality show. And it was him and Greg Grunberg who was on Felicity and Heroes.
Yep.
And they're just in a little studio, and it's all mocked up with all sorts of geek paraphernalia in the background, and it was called Geekin' Out. And it was them just overhyped, overcaffeinated, like, hey, tonight's episode, we're gonna go, and Todd McFarlane's going to show us some new toys, and Chris Pine's going to come in and talk Star Trek. And then we're going to do this, and we're going to do that, and we got a live talk from Comic-Con, and let's go. And it was just like a half-hour rapid-fire, here's a bunch of cool stuff, here's some cool interviews, and let's talk, and we're out. And I loved it. It was 10 episodes tops. I feel like maybe less than that. And right as it's ending, they're starting to find their groove, too. Let's do a little more of this, a little less of that. Let's bring in a girl, too. They brought in Tiffany Smith, who got her start on G4's Attack of the Show and Nerdist, and is just constantly in that area and community. But she would come on with extra stuff. So many people like, this is what I want. This is like, yeah, we're all old enough. When Sci-Fi Channel used to have just like a little news program, like, hey, here's a bunch of cool sci-fi and comic and geek stuff coming up. Let's talk about it and interview people and all.
Sci-Fi Buzz.
Yes, thank you. That's where I discovered Harlan Ellison.
Oh, yeah.
I was like, this guy's amazing. I went down to the library, and I'm like, do you have anything? They had one book, but it was a start.
Yep.
And I want that again. I want something that treats the stuff that we love with respect, treats anything that came before with respect and a love and a passion. Everything new, can joke about it, can have fun with it, like picking on your best friends. Hey, we can goof around. We're not taking it too far. We're all in on joke. We're having a good time. But if anyone else comes in and says anything, we're going to kick their ass. And it just, it, I feel like if the show could have continued, a community could have built up around it. It really could have been like a destination for us. Because I love that behind the scenes stuff. Hey, can I go and see, you know, God, who's a big one now? Can I go and see Jim Lee's studio? You know, can I see how he draws? Can I see all the pens and ink and the, you know, the boards and everything, the reference material and all? Can we just hang out in his studio for like an hour and have that on TV? That'd be amazing. Oh, and then can we go to Comic-Con and do a bunch of interviews? And then can we go on the set new Star Wars movie? Like, I would watch that show weekly. I would make, I would make a point to be home to watch it live. Even if it turned, even if they had the rights to it, which just doesn't happen with TV and media and all, but if like Kevin Smith's company had the rights to it and they're like, you know what, we had fun doing the show, we're going to put it on YouTube, I'll click that bell so I know immediately when it comes up. But I mean, it's obviously never going to happen, but that was just so much fun, and I feel like a real hole in geek pop culture right now that something like that didn't get bigger and that no one else has tried something like that.
What was the goal again?
Geeking Out.
Yes. I actually did watch that when it was coming out, because they had the two kids from Stranger Things on there.
Yep.
And
they were so sweet, too. They didn't come across as precocious young actors, as annoying, nothing. They came across as happy to be there.
Well, I loved their segment. I remember the most because, you know, like I can't remember the character's name, but the curly-haired kid, you know, he just keeps talking, and then the African-American kid is basically telling him, dude, stop talking. Because this is before season two had come out, and he starts rambling on about, you know, things that are going to happen in season two. And I can't remember, I think it was Greg was the one talking to him, and you see his eyes going bigger because they're getting information. And then the black kid's like, dude, shut up. You're talking too much. Like, it was so funny and so endearing at the same time. But,
And now I think of it because, over last year, I've been trying to buy up old Starburst is one of the magazines. There's a British magazine that Marvel produced. There's all, you know, here's what's coming in, like Star Wars and Doctor Who and everything for the time.
Yeah.
I just found Amazing Heroes, which was a comic magazine produced for years. Alter Ego is a good one. But I'm trying to dig up these magazines, 70s, 80s, 90s. Hell, even like Wizard at this point is old enough to find these things where I'm like, everyone has forgotten this. The stuff they're talking about in here, everyone's forgotten about projects that fell apart, ideas we had at the time, everything. Like, just historically, it's fun. So something like this, or, I mean, can you imagine if Sci-Fi is like, hey, on our app, we put up every old episode of Sci-Fi Buzz? I'm calling into work.
Yeah. You can watch some of them on YouTube. I know somebody loaded them up because it's funny you brought this up because it was earlier like this year, I want to say wintertime. I went through like a Sci-Fi Buzz binge like on YouTube, just watching old episodes and clips. Because I used to love that. And like it's funny you say that about Harlan Ellison. That's how I discovered Harlan as well. And all of his, like, not all of his, but most of his segments are on YouTube, like the Harlan Ellison watching segment. Those are gold. Like, I always loved when he came on the show. Yeah, I really wish they would do something like that.
And you know he got paid for it, too.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he definitely got it.
Because it's Harlan.
Yeah, Harlan. Yeah. On one of his, I can't remember, it wasn't the Sci-Fi Buzz stuff, but it was something else he did. Because he kind of did like a video blog for a little bit after Sci-Fi Buzz, like on YouTube and stuff. And they wanted him to do commentaries on the Babylon 5 special features or whatever, yep, and they were doing
It's on Dreams with Sharp Teeth as well.
That's right, yes, yes, that's where I seen it. And he's like, okay, so how much are you paying me? And they're like, well, no, we're not paying anybody. He's like, then I'm not doing it. You pay the writer. You know, like, if you want me, you know, you have to pay. And it was awesome because, you know, so many of his views are so relevant even to this day. you know, about how people give things away for free and you shouldn't, you know. But anyway.
Yeah, topic for another time.
But the geeked out type of show up in Canada, like, because I should have pointed this out at the start of the podcast. Typically, this episode, like when there's three of us on, it's two Canadians and one American. Tonight, it's two Americans and one Canadian. So I'm outnumbered here, which is fine, which is great, you know. But I usually don't get that dynamic on the show. Usually it's Rich and I and someone else is for the Canadian contingent. But tonight, both Kevin and Jason are from the States. But in Canada, we had this program called Inner Space, which was basically our, like, up in Canada, it just got rebranded as of tomorrow. We had a channel called Space.
I saw.
Yeah, I made a comment on social media. There's a channel called Space, and I think it went on the air in 1996. You know, it's kind of like a Canadian institution at this point, the Space Channel. Which is our version of the Sci-Fi Channel in the States. But now it's being rebranded tomorrow, at the time of this recording, as CTV's Sci-Fi Channel, which I think is a terrible name for a channel. Like, Space was a good brand. But anyway, for years they had a TV show called Inner Space, which was kind of like Sci-Fi Buzz, where it was like once a week they did like a half an hour episode. And then 2011... that fall, they switched to being on 5 days a week. So, and it was awesome because they went to San Diego Comic-Con, they went, you know, overseas, you know, like they went to, you know, the set of Game of Thrones. You know, they came to the Calgary Comic Convention. That's how I got to meet the hosts. It initially started with two hosts, Teddy and AJ, and then they got a third host. First it was Cynthia, but now she got switched off and she's doing a different talk show, and they brought in another woman called Morgan, and this show was on, you know, Monday to Friday. It was great. I loved it. It was on my PVR, and then it was a little over a year ago, they abruptly canceled it. They just said, yeah, we're not going to be making, and it was no formal announcement. It was like, they had their episode on Friday, you know, we'll see you Monday, you know, have a good weekend, blah, 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 and then they never came back. And it was so disheartening, it was so sad, you know, like, seeing all, you know, now Morgan is one of the interviewers on Entertainment Tonight Canada. So she's moved on, and AJ and Teddy have moved on to different projects. But it's sad, you know, like we had that window, like they would go to, you know, comic book artists and comic book stores and do stories, you know. You know, maybe a little bit more slanted towards Canada, but they did, like I said, they did go to San Diego. They did, you know, do press junkets and all that kind of stuff. And yeah, those shows just don't exist anymore, and it's sad. Like, I mean, you can go on YouTube. Like, I know the Sci-Fi Channel kind of does mini documentaries, because they did. There was one, I can't remember it's done in concert with the Sci-Fi Channel in the States. I can't remember what it's called, but there was this five-part documentary about Wildstorm, or no, not Wild, Image Comics, about how, you know, the rise and fall and rise again of Image Comics. It was a really good documentary, you know, like they're, I don't know, 15-minute episodes or whatever. But yeah, to have something like this on TV is, I don't know, maybe I'm old-fashioned, but I like it. I would rather watch a program like Inner Space or, you know, the Kevin Smith show, rather than watching a YouTube show, to be honest with you. I'd rather see it on AMC or Space or whatever, that type of setting. But anyway, sorry, didn't mean to take over your...
not to be awful, but I'm looking this up as you're talking about it. That girl was one of the hosts, and they canceled it.
Morgan Hoffman? Yes.
Yeah. She should be a star.
And you know what's funny? Is she got her start, she was a camera person. She was one of,
really?
She was like a camera person / segment producer. Like, she worked behind the camera. And then when Cynthia went on to do a show called The Social in Canada. It's basically like The Talk. You know, like that show with Sharon Osbourne, and I think J-Lo's on it now. And, you know, all them women sit around a table and talk. They have a Canadian version called The Social. And Cynthia went to that. And then they brought Morgan out front from the camera. And then, yeah, she just took off. Like, she's amazing. And, yeah, really. Like, I actually got to meet the Innerspace crew at the Calgary. I've met the two male hosts in 2011 when they were the only ones doing the show, and then I met them and Morgan in 2014, I want to say. And yeah, really nice people. She's, you know, you think she's beautiful on camera, you should see her in person. Absolutely beautiful and super nice. It's a shame that they canceled it. It was a great show. But, anyway. Oh, and I was also going to say, her sister, Morgan has two sisters. Her one sister is like a model up in the Toronto area. Sydney Hoffman. You should check her out on Instagram. I'll throw another TV series out there. Actually, it's two TV series, but I'll be really quick about it. I want them to bring the Flintstones and Jetsons back as their own separate TV series.
And now, like the DC update, or
I personally want it animated and done in the style of Hanna-Barbera. And I want it done in the tradition of the original series. So that means, like, no Seth MacFarlane humor, no South Park humor. You know, I want it to be a family-friendly remake like the originals were. That's my dream. I mean, I do love the DC stuff. I do like that DC comic book series they did there with Mark Russell. And it was very good, but I just want a classic remake. I want something that, you know, you can sit with your little kids and everyone can watch it. Like, you know, they might be able to shoehorn in some, you know, more adult jokes. I mean, I think the Flintstones and the Jetsons did that too back in the day, and make it family friendly. I just don't want to see them go the route of Family Guy or American Dad, or, you know, like one of those where it's like more of a crude humor. I would like to see more of a family affair. But, all right, well, let's go around the table one more time. Jason, do you have another show you want to see brought back?
I sadly do not.
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. No, no problems. Kevin, do you have another show, sir?
I do, and it's been a while, so a lot of the details are going to be lost on me. But there was a little show on, oh my god, what was it called at the time? It's been called like 10 different things in the States. It was the Family Channel at one point, then Fox Family, then ABC Family, and now it's Freeform. But I think back when it was Family Channel, there was a little comic-based show. I don't want to say superhero, because it's kind of like everything combined. Called The Middleman. And
why is that so familiar?
Huh?
I said that sounds so familiar, I just can't remember it.
Yeah. Girl, very good actress named Natalie Morales. She's just trying to like go to a job interview, and all of a sudden some monster attacks, and she freaks out, and a guy just shows up in a suit, and he's got a space gun, and he takes care of stuff, but she kind of helps out a little too. It's very Doctor Who in a way at the start. And then she pretty much follows him and is like, what's going on? What is this? And he goes, well, I do need a partner. Come with me. And he just shows her this world that she now can't tell anyone, but it's pretty much like a monster threat of a week thing there, which she's our viewer POV person. Hey, who's this? I don't understand because I'm new. Let me explain it to you. Okay, cool. Thanks. Moving on. But it's silly. It's over the top. There's like why do I want to say, like, Guillermo del Toro was involved at some point along the way, like, help get it produced or something, because it's totally his weird sense of humor, too. And it is just ridiculously smart writing. Like, the best of like, if someone sat down and was like, I love Joss Whedon's writing, but I want to do my own take on it, with, you know, in my voice, and just kind of, like, put it through a blender, and it still came out well. It's like that. It's just whip smart writing, funny consistently. It only lasted like 10 episodes. It was probably just too expensive for mostly reruns cable channel. But it's so damn funny. It's like, oh God. If Justin Men in Black with a teenager, like, that's probably the best way I can put it. I know there's a DVD set of it at one point and a graphic novel. It's been so long, they're probably both out of print right now, but totally worth it. With all of the, like, Disney Plus and everything that Fox bought and everything, I wouldn't be shocked if it surfaces again on one of the streaming sites this year. Totally worth it, and easy to just breeze through it all, too.
Cool. All right, well, the last show I want to throw out there real quick is Babylon 5. I would love to see a reboot and it be done by J. Michael Straczynski, the original creator of Babylon 5.
Yeah.
I would love to see them use some of the classic scripts and classic plot threads, but also insert some new ones. You know, with the updated technology and the fact that, you know, I would like to see this on a streaming service with a deal in place. You know, at the time, originally Babylon 5 was done through syndication through the P10 network. And, you know, they were always on the bubble. Like, every season they thought they could be canceled. So if they could get a deal in place where they could commit to making, you know, JMS's vision, I would love to see, you know, them do that, and perhaps even do what he originally wanted to do, which a lot of people don't realize or know or realize. He actually envisioned this to be two different series. He wanted, the original plan was to have 2 5-season shows, which would be a total of 10 seasons altogether. First was going to be Babylon 5, which would run 5 seasons, and then the sequel was going to be Babylon Prime, which would, you know, basically the end of Babylon 5, you would see the Babylon 5 be destroyed by the Minbari warrior caste in a battle, and then you would see the crew that escaped go to Babylon 4, and that space station would be used to end the war with the Shadows. You know, and because it was syndication at the time, they had to do the 22-episode route, so there was a lot of filler episodes. So with this, that you wouldn't need the filler episodes. You wouldn't have to, you know, you wouldn't have quotas you'd have to meet for syndication. So, yeah, I could definitely see this as being 2 5-season shows with 10 episodes per season. And I definitely would love to see J. Michael Straczynski see his vision realized. His original vision realized. All right, well, gentlemen, before we get to our Enders segment, let's do that little game of where we can find you on the internet. Jason, where can we find you, sir?
Mostly through my blog, which is nerdylifeofmine.com, and it has all the connections and stuff to whatever social network and pretty much when I'm just now starting to get around and actually start blogging again. This hiatus has just ruined everything, so I'm trying to play catch up. So hopefully this podcast is the start of many new things.
Right on. Kevin, where can we find you, sir?
All right, so apologies to longtime listeners. I thought I had an answer last time. Ended up not liking it, I'm sure, this time. Look for me on the new handle, Masked Ephemera.
All right. Where
I'm going through all sorts of, you know, the forgotten, the thrown away, the stuff that we geeks love that everyone else thinks is garbage. And you'll know you find it if you find the profile picture of a mask over a VHS tape.
Excellent. All right. Well, as for myself, you can find me at my blog, randomnerdness.blogspot.com. Like Jason, I took a little bit of a hiatus over the summer. I posted a few posts here and there. But I recently did an essay on the band Queen. So that is up on my blog. Again, that is randomnerdness.blogspot.com. And I want to thank you, dear listener, for taking the time to download and or listen to this podcast. We appreciate any feedback you can give us. Please leave a review on Apple Podcasts or at podbean.com. Also, we'd like to hear from you. You can contact me, Chris. I am the producer of this podcast, at my email, which is chrisloc1701@yahoo.ca. And once again, that's chrisloc1701@yahoo.ca. And I'm also on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at chrisloc1701. Be sure to check out the Pop Culture Pub group on Facebook. And also be sure to check out the Incredible Fans of the Incredible Hulk. It's a group on Facebook that I am at. Admin at. All right, so without further ado, let us move on to our new segment, well, new-ish segment, and that is Enders. Right, so for Enders this week, I have four quick things that I just want to rifle off real quick and ask the gentlemen that are joined this evening their thoughts. First up, Obi-Wan Kenobi. It is a Disney Plus series that is coming out, and Ewan McGregor is confirmed to be coming back as Obi-Wan Kenobi. So, gentlemen, my question to you is, what do you want to see out of an Obi-Wan Kenobi series? Because this obviously takes place after Revenge of the Sith, but pre A New Hope. So between episode 3 and 4. Jason, what would you like to see out of a Kenobi series?
It would be obviously everything in between, but I mean, it would be interesting to see him, the like personal development after Revenge of the Sith, and just him kind of, obviously it seemed kind of like he always stuck generally close to where Luke was.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, I don't know. I think at this point in juncture, cause it's like the Mandalorian that's coming out.
Yeah.
Like when I first saw it, I was just like, oh, cool, there's IG-88, but it turns out it's like, what was it, IG-11 or something like that? I don't know. It was like completely different robots. So they're going their completely own different routes.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it would be kind of cool to actually see, kind of go back to that core, because Obi-Wan's always been one of my favorites, and I would actually like to see personal developments, him dealing with the aftermath from Anakin and everything from Revenge of the Sith, and just kind of going forward in whatever little side adventures that he has up leading all the way up to New Hope. I think it'd be actually kind of cool.
Excellent. Kevin, what would you like to see with the Kenobi series?
I'm very curious if this is the way to bring Ahsoka into live action.
Yep.
And I could see it. You don't need much more than what we got in New Hope. And you could do a whole season. Obi-Wan's gone to the cantina before, clearly. There's tons of adventures to be told there. You could have him as, like, this parental battle against Owen and Beru. Because they clearly know more than they're letting on until they die. They're clearly trying to protect Luke. And they and Obi-Wan don't actually cross paths on camera. There is a lot of untold story there. Like, you could have Obi-Wan and Uncle Owen in a fist fight, honestly. And, like, a baby Luke, you know, to the side, too young to remember it. But just, you know, so mad that the only option is for this ordinary man to attack a Jedi Master. And I'm not going to let this happen to a child. How dare you? And just being the one that's protecting Luke. Like, there's a lot you could do that is just, yeah, it's Star Wars, but that's just a basic down-to-earth teehee. But, you know, a story that everyone can relate to. Who truly has this child's best interest in mind? And both of us just want the best for him, but we're at such opposite ends. We're never going to see eye to eye here. Like, that's a just a human story. You could tell that story anywhere, in any galaxy far, far away. I think it might be like the sleeper of Disney Plus.
I hope so.
Yeah, I don't think people realize how good it's going to be in Mandalorian. Yes, it looks fantastic. It's a Western in space. It looks amazing. The Marvel ones look amazing. But this might be like, you know, the biggest crossover one. I think people would be like, oh, cool, it's Star Wars, it's Obi-Wan, it's familiar. And then the story is going to happen. They go, oh, my God. This is just a good story. I'd watch this no matter what it is.
Well, and on the Solo movie, like, we got that glimpse of Darth Maul. So they're establishing that, yes, Darth Maul is alive. Yes, you know, what's happened in the cartoons, you know, whether it be Clone Wars or Rebels, is canon. That being said, you know, one of the greatest scenes that they ever did on Rebels was when Obi-Wan Kenobi had his final confrontation with Darth Maul. I would love to see them recreate that live action. I think it would be fantastic. It was a beautiful animated scene to see on Rebels, but I would love to see them do it with Ewan McGregor. And, it doesn't have to be Ray Park, the guy who played Darth Maul in the movie. It could be that other actor. I can't remember his name. He was the vampire on the TV series Being Human, the US version. And I can't remember his name, but he does the voice of Darth Maul in the Rebels and Clone Wars cartoons or animated series. So
didn't he do the video games as well?
Yeah, he was Force Unleashed. Is that the game I'm thinking of? Yeah, he was the model for that that character, the POV character in that game. I can't remember his name, but anyway, he's a great actor in his own right. He was on the first two seasons of the Battlestar Galactica reboot as well. So I'd love to see him as Darth Maul if they can't get Ray Park. But I've got fingers crossed we're gonna see Liam Neeson as a Force Ghost as Qui-Gon. I would love to see him come back and talk to Obi-Wan. I want to see that Force Ghost closure. You know, kind of what, you know, what Luke got from Obi-Wan in Empire and Jedi. I would love to see Kenobi get that.
It's like a season finale surprise.
Yes. Yeah, it would be fantastic. All right, so the second little bit of the enders news I got here, and I'm sorry if I spoiled this for you guys. I don't know if you're reading the Batman comic book or not, but the most recent issue that came out today, so I haven't read it yet, but in the previous issue, Alfred was killed. They're doing a storyline in the main Batman book called The City of Bane, where basically Bane has taken over Gotham. And the people in the asylum are running the city. So, you know, like, I think Joker's like the commissioner, Scarecrow and Mad Hatter are cops, and Batman's basically out of the city. He got his back broke again, and, you know, all of Batman's allies are out of Gotham, and we didn't really understand why. Robin, Damian Wayne came back into Gotham despite being told he wasn't allowed to come into Gotham. You don't know why is Nightwing, why is Red Robin, why are all these guys not going into Gotham? And then you find out that Bane has a hostage. He has Alfred. So when they capture Damian, they literally kill Alfred right in front of Damian. Bane basically breaks his neck in front of Damian, because now Damian is the hostage. Damian is what's going to keep everyone out of Gotham. So my question to you guys, is this real? I know it's comic books and nobody's safe. You know, I think Uncle Ben is the only one that hasn't been brought back to life. Bucky was dead for decades. He came back. Jason Todd, you know, the second Robin, he was killed. He was brought back. Even Aunt May's died and she's been brought back. It was a shocking ending. But obviously this is comic books and no one stays dead.
Well, my two thoughts for it. One, you got the Thomas Wayne Flashpoint Batman running around.
Yeah, and he's bad.
So are we sure this is our Alfred, or could it be Flashpoint World Alfred?
Yeah, and that's the thing. Like, the Tom King, like, the last year, every issue reads like it's a dream sequence. Like, you don't know what is real and what is not real. And then, there's all these, like, issues where, you know, is this really happening? Is this not happening? What's going on? And then, boom, we're in the City of Bane storyline. And, again, is this real? Is this happening? Like, what's going on here?
Well, and also, it was supposed to be Tom King's epic 100-issue tale. And then out of nowhere, DC blindsides everyone, says, what is it? When's he off? Issue 85? But they're going to let him finish his story in a Batman Catwoman comic that they're creating for him to get the 100 issues out, which means they don't like something he's doing. They don't want it to stick to continuity, but here's your separate little sandbox. You can, you know, mess that up all you want. We're going to keep this one nice and neat for, you know, Warner Brothers.
Well,
so he could do it, and it's his own self-contained story.
Yeah.
He can kill whoever he wants, and it's not going to affect the greater Batman continuity. It's just, here's Tom King's story. It'll end at this point, and it's a contained thing.
Well, I think he is being basically forced out, because I think people are getting tired of, like, what's real, what's not. Because some of his issues have been very outlandish, and you scratch your head and, like, how does this fit into continuity? But, on the other hand, as well, DC is really going towards this notion of, you know, there is no real big shared continuity anymore, where everyone could do their own thing. But I think there's a lot, because this is, you know, using air quotes, the Batman title, this is, like, the, you know, flagship title for the Batman franchise. You know, I think that's why they want him off and somebody else on, you know, because his take on it's been very polarizing. I've enjoyed it, But there have been times when I've said to myself, I don't know if I am enjoying this. You know, like it's... But anyway, go ahead, Kevin.
I think a lot of them are padding stories and treading water right now, waiting for Doomsday Clock to finally finish. Because whatever's going to happen there is going to ripple out and affect everything. But, you know, the book it was a 12-issue mini that's taken, like, what, 3 years to fully come out, pretty much?
I think it's already 2 years. So they're going into their third year. But yeah. But then I've also heard rumblings that originally that was the intention of Doomsday Clock. Now they're saying, like, I've heard, I don't know if it's official, but I've heard that people have been saying that DC is trying to pass this off as an Elseworlds tale now. Doomsday Clock, that is. So I'm just, like, I throw my hands up in the air and, like, what? Okay, so what? So this doesn't matter now? Like, I don't know. DC's got some issues, I think, with their own continuity. And, but anyway, the Alfred thing, to me it was shocking. It definitely was shocking. A shocking way to end the comic book. But I'm going to ask you guys a quick question. What's the most shocking comic book death for you? Like, what was the comic book death that made you say, holy crap, I can't believe they just did that? Even though it's comic books and everyone comes back, and we know that, you know. For me, I'm going all the way back to 1987, or was it 88, when Jason Todd was killed. You know, when they didn't... You didn't see the graph, you know, it graphically portrayed, but you knew that Joker had, you know, a pry bar, and then he blew up the cave or wherever Jason Todd was. It was him and his mom, and the fact that he died, and that image of Batman, you know, carrying the broken body of Robin, and then I remember the issue ending with Batman punching Superman in the face, and of course he hurts his hand because it's Superman, and then this limo pulls up, and then Joker comes out, and there's nothing Batman can do because Joker's been made the new ambassador, I think, to Iran at the time.
Yeah.
And so he has diplomatic immunity, so Superman was actually there to stop Batman from doing anything because he couldn't legally. To me, that was shocking. And I always remembered that. I remember showing the kids at school, because I brought the comic with me to school, showing them that he died. But for you guys, what's the most shocking comic book death? Kevin, we'll start with you.
Lori and Judith in the Governor story arc of Walking Dead.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
Silhouette. Pretty much, like, no details, but there's tons of details.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, there had been death in the comic before, but that was your first, oh my god, for real, no one is safe. No one is safe in this. I can't believe they did that. There's no coming back.
Well, yeah. Wow. It wasn't just the fact that Lori got gunned down, but
it was Judith, too.
Yeah, she had the baby. Like, and I'll just add a quick honorable mention, but issue 100 when Glenn died.
Yeah.
You know, and I'll give kudos to the Walking Dead TV show, because I was still watching it when they've actually filmed that, and they did it pretty damn accurately to the comic book. Like, I remember reading it and my jaw dropping and thinking, oh my god. And then when I seen it on TV, I was like, there's no way that, you know, I figured for television they were going to change it up. You know, it would be someone else. It wouldn't be Glenn, but it was. And, wow. That was shocking.
Because there were three moments for me, and then I was like, all right, I'll be surprised, but I won't be as surprised, because now I really realize there's nothing sacred here. Mm-hmm. Lori and Judith... Glenn, Carl getting shot in the eye.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
Lori and Judith, I had to put the book down and walk away, and I didn't pick it up again for like a day or two. Glenn, I was reading it outside in like summer heat, like 90-100 degree heat, and I got cold reading it. And Carl, I was when for a while I was reading it monthly and I waiting for a graphic novel, and I was read that issue monthly and had to wait 30 days. I actually wrote a letter and was in the letters page to the next issue because I'm like, I don't know what to do. Like, I do not know what to do to wait 30 days to see what happens next year.
Yep.
Help me.
So did you stay with the series right till the end?
I did. I'm missing a couple issues for the Michonne, that new place that they were all staying, and she finds her daughter.
Yep.
I'm missing a couple in there, so when it's maybe the next compendium, I'll sit down and go through those again. But for the most part, I've read every issue.
So when it
ended, I got like three in that arc that I missed.
So when it ended abruptly this year, were you shocked by that?
No, because Bleeding Cool kind of said, "Hey, if you don't buy this tomorrow," they posted the picture of the spine like a day or two before, and they go, "Something's up." I'm like, "Oh, yeah, something's up. You don't do that for, you know, just another issue."
Yeah.
So I actually was able to read it the day it came out. I'm like, yeah, this is it. So I wasn't surprised because, you know, once I saw that spine, I'm like,
yeah,
you knew.
Yeah. Jason, do you have a comic book death that shocked you?
It was kind of like going back to, I think, growing up as a kid. Because I read a lot of Spawn and everything else, and I enjoyed Batman and Superman. They were always kind of the staples. And so when they announced the death of Superman, I thought that was kind of, I don't want to say it would shock me, but I think it was just kind of like, it definitely kind of floored me because he was such the iconic and never really done anything on that scale at that time.
Yeah.
And so I remember both me and my dad, we got completely enthralled with it and waiting every week for that new issue on his main line, also in addition to the other comics surrounding that, and just reading through and watching every superhero try to get stop Doomsday fall. And it's like no one can stop him. Mm-hmm. Like everyone tried. Everyone, it went from Dub. It went from down to like Green Lantern. Down to like no one could stop him. Like it just kept going and going and just going through all. I'm like, holy crap! Until finally he gets a Superman. And I remember that last episode, just going blow for blow, just reading through this. And it finally happened, that last hit with that big poster. At least the one I had, but you actually folded it out to, like, was it a four panel? And it was like that one last punch, you know, between the both of them, and they're both down. You know, and it ends with Lois holding them and everything else. And it was just kind of like that. It's just, like, being at that age completely floored me. I was just like, I didn't know you could do that. Like,
yep.
Did they just do that? Like, you know, everything else that followed afterwards was definitely, you know, like, well, it was kind of cool, but at the same time, it kind of almost kind of took away from the effect from what they had. I think if they just left him dead, you know, and just kind of maybe later go down the road, then you start introducing. I think maybe if you had Superboy try to pick up the pieces afterwards, I think that would have been better. But I know they tried, but they had the other four, you know, the Steel and then that half cyborg, half human one. I can't remember his name, but it was, yeah, I remember as a kid just reading those and just realizing, like, oh crap, okay, we're leveling the playing field here.
Yeah.
So that's the one that really sticks out to me, aside from, you know, nothing that really just kind of grabs me of recent days, though.
Yeah. On the documentary that I mentioned earlier on YouTube, the about Image Comics, they actually cited that. Like, people, you know, like, because the comic industry kind of imploded during the mid-90s. And a lot of people said, you know, because of the whole speculator thing, you know, like the death of Superman, you know, was this best-selling comic book. And then, you know, prior to that, it was X-Men 1 and then X-Force and so on and so forth. But they said what killed comics was the return of Superman. Everyone talks about the death of Superman, but it was the return that, like, everyone felt cheated. You know, the common people that don't normally read comics that went to the comic book store to buy the comic book to read The Death of Superman, everyone felt cheated. And, you know, yeah, it's unfortunate, but... all right, well, I've got one quick ender before I go into my last ender. And this just came out today. I seen this on, I think it was The Nerdist. Apparently, the Russo brothers, who directed Avengers Endgame most recently, they also directed Infinity War, they directed Captain America Civil War, Captain America Winter Soldier. Apparently, the Russo brothers, while they're at the Toronto International Film Festival, were doing an interview and apparently were quoted as saying they're up for directing a Fantastic Four movie. So, I don't know about you boys, but when I read that, when I saw that, I got super excited. Because I've been saying on the podcasts for years that I want them to do a good Fantastic Four movie. You know, like, the last one I didn't even watch because I knew it was going to be a bomb, and apparently I didn't miss anything. You know, the two previous, in the mid-2000s were not very good. I mean, they're not the worst comic book movies. You know, there's definitely worse comic book movies out there, but they, you know, it was definitely a missed opportunity. But to know that the Russo brothers, the ones that, in my opinion, directed the best Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, and Endgame is one of my Endgame and Infinity War are probably my two favorite comic book movies, to hear that they are going to be directing the Fantastic Four, which is a comic book that I love, I'm super excited. I'm so excited. I really hope, I think if they want to do this, Marvel's just going to hand them the keys and say, yes, please. I think it's completely up to them. I think Marvel, you know, there's no way they're going to say no to them. If they went to them and said, you know, I want to direct a Mole Man movie, Marvel would say, yes, do it, please. You know, we'll just make whatever you want. So the fact that they want to, you know, take Marvel's first family and make it into a movie, to me, this is a dream come true. Kevin, what are your thoughts?
I don't know. Like, every couple of months seems like the Russo brothers have some new project.
Yeah.
You know, or committed to something else at all. And I mean, we know Fantastic Four is coming. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, question of when. Yeah.
I'm not going to... Yeah, it'd be great if it happened, but I'm just not getting excited. I'm not getting disappointed until something's more concrete.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. But for me...
I have faith in them if it's true, but just...
Like, this is quoted from them. Like, this wasn't, like, taken out of context. It wasn't, you know, like someone overheard them at a dinner. This was them actually giving an interview saying, oh, yeah, you know, I'd love to do we would love to do a Fantastic Four movie. Because I think the question was, you know, if you were to do another comic book movie, which comic book movie would you want to do? Or maybe it was what Marvel movie would you want to do? And it was them saying Fantastic Four. So I'm that alone gives me goosebumps. I'm super, so excited. I know it's not for sure. There's nothing on paper. There's nothing, you know, written out. But, I mean, the Fantastic Four, from what I understand, they weren't thinking of introducing them till Phase 5 anyway, which I think Phase 5 doesn't start till, I want to say, 2022. So we've got a few years yet. So that would give them a little bit of of a break. It'll give them some time to recoup after Endgame. So I'm hopefully optimistic about this. Jason, what are your thoughts?
I have a love-hate relationship with the Fantastic Four. At least with the meet, like the movies or whatever cameos they do, it's like the first Fantastic Four, then you have the, what was the other, Rise of the Silver Surfer?
Yep.
I mean, it was entertaining. The last one was just kind of just, it was, my kids couldn't finish it. They didn't like it. They, which is saying something, because you got a, you know, a 10-year-old and a 12-year-old. They're just kind of like, this isn't good.
I don't blame them. I didn't finish it either, to be honest with you.
Yeah, and it's just like, I think what's frustrating was, it's just like they had a good cast and they could have done really well, but it just seemed to fall apart so quickly, and they relied so heavily on CG. And I mean, CG is great, but there's some points where it's just like, did you need to do that? It's like they almost had that George Lucas problem, you know? It's like you CG'd the crap out of everything. Like, you don't need to do that.
Yeah.
You know? But if they do it, again, like you said, if it's concrete and they actually go through with it, I will go see it, because I do have faith in them, and they've proven with how many movies. Mm-hmm. And not even just in this, the Marvel universe, like even outside of that, like their own individual movies, like they do really good, solid movies. And so if they do a Fantastic Four, I would probably go see it in theaters. But till then, I'm just going to stick with the comics.
Yeah. Well, for me, like if it turns out not to be the Russo brothers, I think I will go to the theater to see it. I will be hopefully optimistic, because this is Kevin Feige and the Marvel Cinematic Universe, not 20th Century Fox. You know, like it's these guys doing it now. So I'm hopefully, like, I was already hopefully optimistic that, you know, a new Fantastic Four movie would be better than anything that came previously. But, you know, add the Russos to the mix, like, oh my god, you know, like, you went from better to holy shitballs awesome.
Yeah.
In my mind, anyway. But anyway, I wanted to end Enders by talking about a documentary really quickly that I saw this last weekend, and it's called What We Left Behind. And it is a Star Trek Deep Space Nine documentary done by original Star Trek Deep Space Nine showrunner Ira Stephen Bear. This is a great documentary. This is one of the best documentaries I've ever seen. I should also point out I'm a huge Deep Space Nine fan. It's my favorite Star Trek series. But, you know, taking that aside, the documentary is, it's a 2-hour documentary with about 3 hours of extras. There's so much here. It's done in an unique way that I don't think's been done before, where Ira Stephen Bear actually got all of most of his writing staff back, and they actually broke down what the first episode of a season 8 would look like. If they got, you know, basically the premise is, if they got tapped on the shoulder tomorrow to bring Deep Space Nine back to television, what would season 8, or the first episode of season 8, what would that be? And throughout the documentary, and, you know, they basically break down the episode. And it was amazing. Also, this is a documentary done in high definition. Unfortunately, Deep Space Nine did not get the high definition treatment from Paramount. Star Trek Enterprise and the original series and The Next Generation are all available on Blu-ray. Enterprise was the newer of the Star Trek shows, so I think it was easier for them to convert it to Blu-ray at the time. And then the original series and TNG, it was such a process to convert them to HD that they actually lost money on it. Like, they didn't make money from the DVDs by doing this, so Paramount said, yeah, we're not doing this anymore. So unfortunately, Deep Space Nine, as of right now, based on the technology that it exists to convert to high definition, it's just too expensive. So Deep Space Nine is not getting that treatment, unfortunately. However, for this documentary, they did convert some scenes to high definition from different episodes. And they show, I don't know if you guys remember, Season 6, Episode 6, there's an episode called Sacrifice of Angels. This is the episode where Sisko and the Defiant go back to Deep Space Nine because the Deep Space Nine has been taken over by the Dominion, and they want to bring reinforcements through the wormhole. And before Sisko left Deep Space Nine, he had mined the wormhole. So now the Dominion's found a way to destroy the minefield so they can open the wormhole. So Sisko's got to go back, right? So there's this big battle there where you've got the Federation fighting the Dominion. You got, you know, galaxy-class starships. You got all these different ships fighting the Dominion. And then the Klingons show up, and then they're fighting. It's this amazing battle sequence that has never been seen in high definition. And in this documentary, they show it in high definition, this, you know, whatever, five-minute clip. And it's so amazing. Like, the special effects are so amazing in high definition. Like, it's crazy what you don't see in standard definition. And then you see it converted into high definition, and all the little details that you've never seen before, because it was smudged or whatever with standard definition. It's so great. So on this documentary, yeah, like I said, you get to, you know, they bring the cast back, they do interviews, you know, the supporting cast does interviews. There's a few little nuggets that you learn from this documentary. I don't want to give too much away, but it's so worth it. If you're a Deep Space Nine fan, if you're a Star Trek fan, I highly recommend What We Left Behind. I watched it on Apple TV. Like, I think it was $15 I paid for it, but you can order the Blu-ray. I know that is available at Amazon. And I should point out that this documentary was made possible through crowdfunding. It was an Indiegogo backed project. Unfortunately, I'll admit, I was not an Indiegogo backer of this documentary. Not because I didn't think it was a good documentary. I had heard about it. I seen their, you know, their... they did a thing on YouTube where they were asking for people to back their project and so on and so forth. The reason why I didn't back it at the time is because I've been burned before with these crowdfunding things. You know, I've contributed, I was thinking back on this, three different times to crowdfunded projects, and only one of them ever actually succeeded. Like, one of them, where I actually got what I paid for, and that was the Green Girl documentary. That was the documentary done by George Pappy, who's been on several of my podcasts. And it was a documentary about actress Susan Oliver, who played the original Green Girl, Vina, on the original Star Trek pilot, The Cage, which was later used on the two-part episode, The Menagerie. You know, everything George set out for his crowdfunding campaign, he did. Like, I got my movie, I got a T-shirt, I forget what else. But everything I paid for, I got. But there was two other ones. I think they were graphic novels, I think. I think they were, you know, someone doing a graphic novel. And it never happened. So my contributions, I never got my money back. I never got any of the, you know, because... basically, you donate by tier. So like certain tiers, like one tier you'll get like a t-shirt or an autograph, and another tier you'll get a copy of the movie and you'll get this and that and so on, or whatever the case may be, whether it's a, you know, graphic novel or a movie or whatever you're supporting. So at the time when this Deep Space Nine Indiegogo campaign came, I just had enough. I was like, no, I'm not donating to it. If they get enough, they'll make the movie, and then I'll buy it. If they don't, then I'll have saved myself $50, because I was so tired of, you know, I'd been burnt twice. So, but looking back, you know, because these guys on this documentary, like I said, in the special features, they actually, you know, thank all the backers, and they really, you know, go through the process of how they were able to do this because of the Indiegogo backing, right? And all the different things that they weren't going to do that they were able to do, because from what I understand, this was the most successful Indiegogo campaign they've ever done. Like Indiegogo, the fundraising site. Like I think originally they only asked for like $120,000, and I think they ended up with like $500,000 in donations. So they were able to do like the HD thing. They were able to, you know, do this and do that that they would not have been able to do otherwise. But anyway, enough rambling. What You Left Behind is a great documentary. I give it a solid 5 out of 5. If you are a Deep Space Nine fan, I think you will enjoy this. All right. Well, gentlemen, I want to thank you both for joining me this evening on the podcast. Thank you.
No problem. Thank you.
Loads of fun as always.